Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place.
And good morning, everyone, and welcome to Happy Hour, another edition of Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. I am Frankenberry, and we are back. We have a brand new guest coming up for you today, and a guest that's got some very interesting ideas when it comes to publishing and when it comes to, I guess, making money. She's got a brand new book herself.
Well, she's a very shrewd businesswoman, but we're going to be talking to our guest today about her two books, which are honestly iconic books. They are worldwide bestsellers, over 1 million copies sold. And I am talking about author Sherry Argoff. What are the names of her books? I love this. I love this because we air on terrestrial radio first, so we have to be a little cautious about our descriptive words. But she has written two books. The first is Why Men Love Bees. Should I say that? Why Men Love Bees?
I think we can go with bees. Yes, that would work.
Okay. Why Men Love Bees, From Doormat to Dream Girl, A Woman's Guide to Holding Her Own in Relationship. And then she followed that book with a second book, Why Men Marry Bees. Both of these books are, and we're going to talk to her about all of this, but her definition of the B word is not bad. It is very empowering. And we're going to talk about that and what she really means by why men love and or marry bees and how you can become a bee. So,
yes, even you, Frankenberry, you just need a different wardrobe. That's all.
Become a bee. So Sherry Argoff is going to be coming up after the break.
All right. Very cool. Good. Sounds good. Very, very cool indeed.
Yes.
So what else is happening in Jonna Spilbor, Carol Pesci land?
Did you rehang that door? Did you ever get that door back on the hinges?
Oh, that's right. After you had to buy that special cubby thingy to cover the litter box.
Which I love. Which I absolutely love. I love that little cubby thingy so much that if there comes a day when I no longer have these little rescue cats, I'm going to keep it and I'm going to crawl in it. Like, you know, when George would go under the desk in Seinfeld, it's like
take a nap.
It is big enough to do that. And I just love it. I just absolutely love it. So, yeah. But funny you should ask, because you guys remember the whole saga, right? Where I had my landscaper. First of all, my much younger boyfriend could not help me drag that thing up the stairs because he conveniently threw his back out, right? I don't know how you throw your back out in your 30s, but he managed right when I needed to bring that hunk of furniture.
Hey, Spilbork, in his defense, I threw my back out in my early 20s working at a loading trucks at a grocery store warehouse. So it is certainly possible.
Well, he was tying his shoes. Okay.
Hey, I've tossed my back just stepping out of the shower.
All right. If you want to defend a bro in his back ailment.
Defend a bro.
So he throws his back out. So the next day my landscaper comes and I'm like, oh, can you come help me drag this furniture up the stairs? And before I get to ask him that question, he gets off the lawnmower and I said, how are you doing? He's like, I'm good, except I threw my back out. I'm like, what is going on? Like, what is happening? But anyway, he got it up the stairs. And then if you remember the story, I couldn't actually get it in the room because stupid me didn't calculate the trim of the door preventing it from sliding in by literally 1/32nd of an inch. So your sister here had to find her pink tools and get the door off the hinges, slide it in, and then put the door back on the hinges. Well, let me tell you, it took literally 5 days to get the door off the hinges. I know what you're thinking, especially you, Curly, because, you know, you've done a lot of home reno, you've done a lot of real estate flipping, you've done a lot of the work yourself. I know this to be true. And you're saying to yourself, what in the heck would take 5 days to get a simple door off its hinges? I thought the same thing. But those hinges were not coming out for love or money. They were like super glued in these. The pins were like super glued in the hinges, right?
Gotcha.
Now, I could have taken my pink electric screwdriver and taken the actual hardware off the door, you know, unscrew it. But I said to myself, I'm not that skilled. Like, I might be able to get the door off the actual hinges with my pink electric screwdriver, but I know I ain't going to get it back on. And then what will happen is I'll have three feral stray kittens running amok because I won't be able to get the door back up.
Right. And one of the big problems is, speaking of the three stray kittens, is that you have painted yourself into a corner and you're hiding from your parents. So you can't call your dad to help you out with this. And you're hiding from your parents at our age, for God's sake, not when you're like in high school.
Right, exactly. Thank you for the reminder.
You're welcome.
Of my dysfunctionality. I appreciate that. You're 100% right. So I'm in this alone, Frankenberry. I was in it alone.
That's right.
So whatever, when I'm in trouble, what I usually do is I go to the Google. And it turns out that there is a tool you can get that will help you. Like, I'm not the only person who had stuck hinge pins, right? It happens. And somebody along the way invented a tool that will help you get them unstuck. I bought that tool. Tippy, tippy, tappy. I get the door off the hinges.
Tippy, okay. Tippy, tappy.
Tippy, tippy, tappy. I get the door off. And now I'm like cooking with gas, you guys. I slide this monstrosity in the room. I'm so happy. I get it moving in far enough. And now before I go and set that up, I know I've got to get this door back on the hinges because, as I said, the whole reason for this whole project is I've got three stray feral kittens living under my spare bed.
And getting it back on is always harder than getting it off.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I wish you would have told me that.
Especially with one person, which I've done, but it's not easy.
It is not. It's definitely a two-person gig if you can.
Thanks for telling me.
Well, you didn't ask for us not to be able to tell you.
Who would have thunk? Like, not all, I figured it's a door. Like, I can handle it. But not only did I do it alone, I did it so alone that there was nobody, like, even in my house. There wasn't even a boyfriend nursing his back in the other room. They'd be like, hey, help me. I'm stuck under the door. Like, nothing. So I get the door off and I go to put it back on and I realize I have to simultaneously lift this door ever so slightly to line it back up with the hinges, hold it there with one hand and put the hinges back with the other.
Yep.
I hadn't thought it through. So, okay. So now I got to get a grip on this door.
Meanwhile, she's got her smiley emoji slippers on that are 4 inches thick.
I got my smiley emoji slippers. I got the three cats, scared enough that they're under the bed, so they're not in my way or trying to get out. I take the door because I have to get like a center of balance. I take the door and I lay the door on the bed so that I could like... Okay, I'm gonna grab it like this. I'm gonna put it up here, and I got the pins in my mouth because I got I only have two hands, right? And I'm getting ready. I'm all Tim the Tool Man, and I go to now lift the door with both hands from its position on my spare bed when my legs are bare because I'm wearing boxer shorts with my emoji slippers. When I go to grab the door and I don't realize how top heavy it is, and I basically decapitate my legs.
Amputate?
Oh, yes.
Amputate. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Decapitate your legs is a mental image I don't need.
Well, I was wearing faces on my feet, so that kind of works. but I decapitate my legs from the knees down with this freaking door because the top is so heavy that the bottom now swings up, boom, hits me in both shins, crunch. Oh,
no. Falls
down on the bed. I follow it down on the bed like Flat Stanley. Like,
Flat Stanley.
Meanwhile, my thoughts are going to, I don't know if I want the cats to remain safe under the bed or if I want them to all escape and never come back, because this ends the nightmare, getting the door back on the hinges. So now now with my broken legs, my battered shin, I managed, but the skin of my teeth, banging up the door frame and all the trim, I get it back on, and I figure I just got to get one pin in, and then I got both my hands free, which I did, banged them in, and then set up the room. But I said to myself, self, never again. Like, I'm not cut out for carpentry. I'm not cut out to take things apart and put them back together. I am not cut out for this. It took like a good, my shins hurt for like a week.
But you did it.
But I did it.
Yes, and I'm sure there's a certain pride in that too there, Spielborg.
Can I give you a small little follow-up?
You can't even tell your father it's a story either. That's sad.
No, I can't. I can't tell anybody but you guys. I can't tell. But this is how, okay, so this is how screwed up my brain is. So I get through this traumatic experience, but I literally took my house apart to get this furniture in for these cats. Now I think to myself, wow, I can do things. I can jump higher than the tallest building. I can outrun a speeding locomotive. I did this. So fast forward a week, I go to my mother's house, who has no idea, at least I don't think so, of my plight with these cats.
Did she notice your decapitated legs? And
Didn't show her my decapitated legs, but she should have known that something was up. When I go to her house, and in her living room, she's got this, she shops online. I don't know where she gets it from. She shops online, like it's her job.
Who gets it from who?
Right. She's got this beautiful Christmas decoration. It's like a 3-foot kind of pretty abstract Christmas tree decoration with lights on it that just arrived from QVC, right? And so she was having trouble. It's got 3 pieces. She was having trouble putting the pieces together. So I get the pieces together because now I am a master and I get the pieces together, right? But when we get the pieces together, the tree, so it's shaped like a very primitive Christmas tree with a star on top, but the star is now facing the wrong direction. Like the star is supposed to be kind of horizontal with the tree, but it's completely perpendicular. So when you're looking at the tree, the star is completely sideways. So I said to my mother, is this supposed to be like that? She's like, oh, I don't think so. I'm like, you go online and look to make sure it's not supposed to be like that. And I'll examine this tree to see if there's something I can twist to make it right.
That should have been her first clue.
Right. Because I don't do stuff like that. So I'm examining this tree, and now because I'm, you know, a pro with a screwdriver, I'm like, oh, I'll just take these 3 screws out. I'll twist this piece around and then the star is going to be right. She's like, go right ahead. Doesn't say, where did you learn this? Why all of a sudden do you have an interest in screws? Like, never said anything.
As she pulls her power tools out of her purse.
My purse, like, power tools, right? So I get the tree apart and lo and behold, history repeating itself. I can't get the tree back together. So,
of course you can.
There I am over her dining room table, huffing and puffing and cursing and moaning. And I'm like, I'm trying to get the tree back together. It's these 3 little screws. And while I do that, I said, Mom, please go online and find out what the deal is with this tree. Like, why is it tip topsy turvy? Why is it sideways? And I'm slowly getting the tree back together. And I hear her scream from the other room. Oh, the star rotates. I said, so if we had turned the tree on, I would not be struggling over your dining room table, taking apart your brand new stupid QVC light up angel hair Christmas tree.
Angel hair.
I would be enjoying a glass of wine and not breaking my nails. Is that what you're saying, Nancy?
It's funny.
Yeah. So I did all that for nothing. Because why? Because I have this false sense of my construction acumen now that I ripped half my house apart and put it back together by myself, only decapitating two legs in the process. That is my false sense of confidence now. Thank you very much.
But you know what, Jonna? It is so well deserved.
Oh, is that a compliment?
I'm not sure. Not sure.
I'm waiting.
Hey, I
don't know.
I got nothing. I'm not coming up with a
sense of confidence. Well deserved.
I'm not coming up with a segue here. Is that what we're looking for?
Are we saying?
No, I'm just trying to understand what you were saying.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the segue. This isn't going to be an easy one for you, Curly, but on tick tock.
Well, look, I know that you really wanted the youngin' to help you, and he wasn't up for it, and you had to do it yourself. But I think men love women who are independent and can figure things out and aren't needy. You know?
Nicely done.
That's all I got.
Right. Because that's what we're going to be talking all about when we come back from this break with author Sherry Argoff, who is a New York Times bestselling author. She has sold over 1 million books. She is internationally known worldwide. Her books have been translated into, she told me, I don't know, I want to say like 30 languages. It's a big number of languages. She has over 22,000 ratings. And they're like 4.8 star rating, so let's just say 5. And the book that we're going to be focusing on today is Why Men Love Snitches with a B.
And also Why Men Marry Snitches with a B.
Yes.
Oh. Doormat to Dream Girl, a woman's guide to holding her own in relationship and holding her own when tearing down her own doors. I added that.
I gathered that part. All right. That is what's on the way here with Jonna Spilborn and Carol Pesci. You're listening to Happy Hour, and we have that guest on the way. So please stick around.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back, everyone, to Happy Hour here. It's Jonna Spilborn, it's Carol Pesci, it's Just Some Dude, and it's also time for our guest, and we are going to be talking to Sherry Argoff today. Is that correct there, Jonna?
Yes, we are. And not only is Sherry a world-renowned author, she is going to be our new best friend.
She already is
our new best friend. But let me tell you a little bit about Sherry Argoff, and we're going to... Listen, I feel bad that we have to edit a little bit what we're going to be talking about, but it is radio, it is Sunday morning, so I will do that under protest. Sherry Argoff is the author of Why Men Love Itches and Why Men Marry Itches, both books have appeared on the New York Times bestseller list, the Los Angeles Times bestseller list, the Sunday Times bestseller list, and on bestseller lists in Latin America, Europe, and Asia. So for starters, folks, she's a pretty big deal. Her work has been featured in Newsweek, People, U.S. Weekly, Vanity Fair, Vogue, Marie Claire, Daily Glamour, Elle, Self, Maxim. Hang on, I'm still going.
Gosh.
Wait, there's more. And on programs like The Today Show, The View, MSNBC, Fox News, MTV, etc. Sherry's book, this is what I really love, because, you know, anybody can get on the New York Times bestseller list. Kidding. But Sherry's books were named, quote, 10 most iconic relationship books of the past 10 years by Yahoo and America's Top Relationship.
Wow, that's awesome.
So Sherry's books are everywhere. These are considered a guide for empowering women. They are world renowned. And as luck would have it, we have her right here on Little Old Happy Hour with Jonna, Carol, and Frankie Berry. Sherry, after all that, welcome.
I am ready to write a check for that introduction. That was so kind.
She's got Venmo.
Where do I send the payment? That was so nice. I'll pay twice for that one. Oh my gosh. Wow. I almost didn't recognize who you were talking about. Thank you, though. Very gracious of you. Very, very kind of you. It's true. truly my pleasure to be with you guys. I've heard wonderful things about your show. Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, we are very happy to have you here. And again, we want to apologize because we want to talk about this book. And, we have to be a little cautious because of the hour and because of where we air initially about this particular word. But, Sherry, let me just say for the record, and this can launch our discussion. So you've written two books, Why Men Love Itches with a B and Why Men Marry Itches with a B. And let's just be very clear. That word, the way you use it, is not a bad word. In fact, right. It's quite the opposite. So why don't we start with, what is the true definition of that word in regards to both of your books?
The way that I use it, a confident woman, right? Somebody who has the ability to stand up for herself, that has a backbone, not mean, not abrasive, not offensive, not uncouth, not any of that. But you can be good natured and still be a principled person and still stand up for yourself. And I just thought that women needed a message other than be an arm piece, be a sex pot, be a toy, be an object, be anything that's physical. Okay. That's all we're told. But I felt like women needed a message that was contrary to that, about what men really, really are intrigued by. And they're often intrigued by whatever they don't see every day. And a woman who's not going by the predictable rules and trying to fit into a mold is often what intrigues them. That's what I found.
And I think the way that you use the word, and I think a way that this word probably has evolved, is it does mean powerful woman, not a nasty. I mean, I guess it could mean a nasty insult, but to me, it means powerful woman. We know Carol has her own book with that word in the title, and it means an empowered woman, based on Carol's story as well. So let's just get that clear. If anybody's going to complain or send any sort of email, it's not a bad word, and certainly not in this context. And Sherry, you and I were talking off air last night, actually, about the need for women, I think more than ever, to kind of take ownership of we see so much going on in social media of people just being so superficial, women especially being so superficial, that the whole, like, I don't know, I call it kind of like the Kardashian mentality, like people who don't deserve the recognition.
On crack. Yeah. Kardashians on crack. At least the Kardashians are businesswomen, but
right, they
The whole like me.
Yeah.
Follow me. I'll do anything I can. It's almost like a carnival barker, just look at me, notice me, like me, And then there's jealousy. Oh, did you like her? Why did you like her? Why did you like her photograph? It's just a vortex of neediness, really. I agree with you that it's getting worse, not better, sadly.
So then, with all that going on, with all the superficial attention seeking kind of thing, where people are making money off it now, right? These influencers, that's what it's all about. They're money off their superficiality. They're making money off their attention seeking. Why then do men love powerful women, and why do they marry powerful women, as opposed to what they're being bombarded with on social media, it seems like, in this day and age?
Yeah, well, and plus everybody has a different definition of power, right? I mean, for some people it's quiet power. For some people it's a little bit more outlandish in your face. Let me just take a couple steps back and say that when I did write the book, I researched my positions, right? And I interviewed men and I gathered all the information because I'm a journalism major, and I really, really, really did the homework and tried to get behind the curtain, so to speak. And what I found was that men were intrigued by women who, because they see all the stereotypes also, and they know that we're under pressure to meet all of those stereotypes. And when a woman just has an irreverence, kind of a, hey, take me or leave me, this is who I am kind of mentality, immediately he respects her a little bit, because she doesn't think like everybody else. She's not trying to fit herself into what they know is a degrading standard.
This is so interesting, because I can hearken back to my younger days. And actually, Frankenberry, I'm also thinking of somebody who used to chase you, and how the more you got chased by this person, the less interested you were. And that's kind of like, so neediness is not sexy. I really
don't. Nope.
But yet I think younger women, especially until they come into their own, they can kind of appear that they're very, very needy and actually turn off the men that they're trying to get closer to.
Right. But she thinks that if she's needy with, you know, long eyelashes and long nails and the right jeans and the right heels and the right bag and the red bottom shoes, that she doesn't look desperate, because women aren't taught to be self-assured. And what is it that gives us self-assurance? Is it what's on the outside? No. The most attractive thing you can wear is confidence. And confidence is not loud and in your face and doesn't require constant reassurance. If somebody requires constant reassurance, you may as well just have like 1500 bricks on your back, because it's so much pressure, you know? And when someone is a little bit more self-assured and well-rounded and they derive their confidence from, right, immediately men see more substance and it's like, oh, she's different. I have to raise my game a little bit for this one. Am I right, Frankenberry? Because he's being awfully silent, and I would like to know.
That's his MO.
Inquiring minds would like to know. Come on, Frankenberry.
That is my MO, being the strong and silent type. Yes.
Yes, yes. He is.
Well, Sherry, and pleading Sherry, the fifth. He's pleading the fifth. Yeah.
He is. He's being very cautious.
KG.
Sherry, this is Carol. I want to add for people listening right now that the two titles of the two books that we're talking about in particular are Why Men Love Bees, Why Men Marry Bees. And while there's a lot of relationship dynamic advice in your books, and I'm loving your style, you are so funny. And I love when an author take great content and deliver it in a way that's not dry and what's funny, which was the objective of my first book as well. But beyond that, I feel like you are giving us a lesson in the importance of knowing who we are, knowing what we want, and being okay with being who we are and stating what we want. Like, I think the lessons go deeper than just a relationship dynamic. I think your books can be confidence boosters.
That's what I'm told. I hope that's the case. You hope that when you write a book that you touch people. You really do. And, you know, if you can give somebody a positive feeling about themselves, that's kind of, you know, the goal, right? I mean, I envisioned myself sitting on a bed talking to someone who was maybe a younger sister. So, right. Someone, you know, a woman, you know how it is when we fall on our face. We all fall on our face. Let's face it. We're all out there, you know, fighting for our meals, so to speak. And, you know, life is not easy. And so I just found that when I fall often, I want a pep talk. I want someone to make me laugh. I want someone to kind of joke around with me a little bit, make me feel like it's okay. And kind of take the sort of the humiliation and embarrassment out of it, right? Because we all experience that. But and so I kind of wanted to write a book with humor, because I think if you're going to talk about dignity and self-confidence and the darker things about relationships, the harder things about relationships, it's got to have some humor, because if you can't laugh at yourself, you can't really get past it, right? I mean, once you start laughing, you start healing. That's what I say in the book. So I truly believe that. So I wanted to apply that to the book also and just make it kind of funny, but also, okay, maybe the subtext is really the serious message as opposed to shoving it down people's throats.
You did that beautifully.
Thank you. But some people didn't get it. They didn't get the tongue in cheek. You know, they thought I was serious, right? When I'm telling women to make popcorn. I mean, I think it's okay to occasionally break out the guacamole and chips. I'm not an advocate of starving the poor guy, right? I mean, you know, I mean, you can include a cold beer with the popcorn. It's all good.
And the context Sherry's talking about for anybody who hasn't yet read her books is on the first date, the first time you have a guy over, if you're going to cook him foie gras in a 5-course meal and spend hours prepping, it's like takes the intrigue out of it. You're trying too hard. You're looking too desperate. So she suggests that you get some microwave popcorn. If you burn the top, just scrape off the burnt bits. So her humor, like, she's kind of making a point. She's not, you know.
Wait a minute. That's supposed to be funny? I do it on a daily basis. What are you talking about?
With an apron. With an apron. Okay. You got to have the apron, though, so you look like you know what you're doing.
I've seen Johnny use a microwave, though, so she's making progress.
No, but you know, when you break out the foie gras, I didn't pronounce it right, you have to assume that the guy knows that you're pulling out all the stops, and he's
trying. Right, you're trying.
And all of a sudden he's on a pedestal. What have you done to yourself in that process? Yep. Right, you've said you're better than me. Never give the message you're better than me. Like, the confidence, really, if you think about it, if you boil it down to the basics, is somebody who believes that, hey, I don't believe anybody else is better than me. I don't believe I'm better than anyone else either, right? Because that would be arrogance, and I wasn't raised to believe that. But I also don't think that anyone else is better than me. So therefore, I'm not going to back down or be pushed around or bullied either. And when you have that mentality, you navigate differently in life than if you believe so-and-so is better than me. Oh, I'm so-and-so. I'm better than this person. Oh, but they're better than me. And you're constantly comparing yourself, and you're constantly, don't believe what other people tell you about yourself, and don't believe that other people are better than you, even if they act like they are. You know, so those are the things I talk about in the book, is the confidence aspect, right? And some people think that I'm telling people to be disingenuous. I'm not.
No.
You've got to have something going for you other than just what you look like, because sex is only sex if there's nothing else that connects you to a person. And it's not even worth having, frankly. Well, I'm sure that the gentleman in the room would disagree, but it's, emotionless sex. No, it doesn't, the whole sports sex. No, thank you.
Yeah. I think a lot of women would agree with that. And I'm happy to learn that I've been doing something right, because there have been on a few occasions, and I told you about my much younger boyfriend, he's gone into my refrigerator and pulled out a beer and said, "Oh, this beer expired last April." And I said, "It ain't going to kill you. Drink it anyway. Suck it up. What do you want me to do? Get your own damn beer if you think you expired beer. Who looks at the expiration date on beer or ketchup? Like, come on.
Nobody.
I know, right? Whoever died from an expired beer."
You know what I would do? I would probably take out a black Sharpie, right? I would cross out the expiration date. I'd write over it my new expiration date and go, "Here you go. Problem solved."
I'd write over it too, but it would begin with an F.
And Sherry, what you're saying here, not to get confused, is you're not saying to be a B. You're not saying to be rude. You don't advocate being mean.
No, I think that actually is a form of insecurity. Somebody who doesn't have self-control, and somebody who thinks that you've got your moral compass backwards if you think that that's acceptable behavior, right? I mean, if I wrote a book called "Why Men Like Women Who Are Competent, Who Contribute, and Who Aren't Desperate, and Who Have a Job, and Who Help Pay Some Bills," first, it wouldn't fit on the cover, and second of all, nobody would buy it, right?
True.
Yeah, you lost most guys after like word four.
Right. If I name my book "Happy Woman," snooze alert. Yeah.
Right. Right. Happy Woman. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. And anybody in the book business knows you want to have a catchy title, but you got to have a good message too.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of books with catchy titles that don't really go anywhere, and it's not the title that makes a book sell, because people do care about the content of a book being substantive. I do believe that. And I was fortunate, both unfortunate and fortunate, in the sense that I started out with a small publisher that wasn't really owned by a large publishing house yet. And they didn't really have an enormously large publishing, publicity budget. So I didn't really have, that 10-city book tour that the Obamas get, or, all of that, the bells and whistles. That only happens in the movies. What I did have, though, was I had word of mouth. Women were telling other women about my book. It's the kind of book that you tell your girlfriends about, because it's that kind of tone. Or you tell your mother about it if you have that kind of relationship with your mom or your daughter. You know, a lot of mothers and daughters share my book with each other, and so do girlfriends. And I'm thrilled by that, because I wanted it to have that tone. I wanted it to have kind of like, Samantha in Sex and the City. She's edgy, but yeah. she's also confident. She also yep. was confident. She was my favorite character, and I think she was everybody's favorite character, not because of the sex scenes. She was just the friend you wish you could have. You know, she was the fun one.
She would say the things you wish you could say, right? And, you- and I did want to ask, see, one of the things that fascinates me about your books is you got information straight from the horse's mouth, right? This is why men love bees. Well, you talk to the guys.
And I had to.
Questions. And so I'm dying to know, like, were they eager to talk? Like, was it pulling teeth? Like, how did the interview processes go with these with dudes? Did they want to tell you this?
They actually really did. And it was amazing how much they opened up. So the ones that wouldn't talk to me, mm-hmm. it happened on occasion. If they clammed up, I knew immediately that they were interested in me. Right.
Oh, wow.
But the one, right. Because they won't talk to you if they've got a, you know, they think they've got an interest, right? But if as soon as you establish, okay, I promise I won't use your name. I promise you're anonymous. At the time, they probably thought what I thought, which is that I was going to sell 10 copies, right? And they opened up like little, you know, flowers. I mean, wow. It was amazing, the clarity. And I still have 2 or 3 banker boxes. Some of this, the notes I wrote after I wrote the book, right? But every time I bump into someone or I meet somebody at a restaurant or a bar, or I just start having a conversation with a man and he tells me something really, really interesting, I write it down and I put it in the box. So imagine those banker boxes that you put files in, right? I have 3 overflowing with probably several thousand pieces of paper just because of interviews on napkins, you know,
like, wow.
I could write 5 books with the interviews I've had with men, and the things they say, just, it's never, I'll never get over being shocked by the candor ever. It was shocking to me. And that's why I knew that it would be interesting to women, because it was so interesting to me as well.
Well, they probably haven't had much of an opportunity to share their perspectives on this topic and in this way.
Yeah, I think I had a good instinct about the questions to ask, because I knew what bothered me as a woman, right? So I started with that. But, you know, if you're a good, you know, journalist, you know which questions to ask, and you know what the Achilles heels are, right? Mm-hmm. And like, for example, Frankenberry won't answer my questions, right? But
no, Sherry.
One thing
you do not know about me is, at this particular point in my life and after 10 years of being single, none of this has any interest for me, because I'm not going to be dating anyone.
See, Sherry, that's it. That's his problem. He's a non-dater.
It was that bad? It was that bad?
No.
That you've written off women?
No, I'm just a very happy single dude, and I do my own writing, and I'm very pleased to do that, and I don't need any relationship around that.
Sherry, he has cats.
Okay, I've got cats.
Mm-hmm. I love animals.
Crazy cat lady guy.
Yeah,
I always say that if I ever run for public office, that my platform will be tough on men, soft on animals.
There you go.
But I love
animals. Are good. Animals are good. I love
animals. They are,
and animals know good people. But just I want to harp on this for a minute, because I love the fact, like, when people are in relationships, when women are in relationships with men, right? Like, we all are. Sometimes it's like pulling teeth to get information out of them, especially when you want to talk about your relationship or if they're having an issue at work. Like, sometimes it really does feel like they clam up and don't talk. You got the guys talking. So the book allows us to be the fly on that wall.
Yep.
That's what I think women love. And we need more of, because then we can learn and take our relationships in a direction maybe that they need to go, even with our clammy guys.
Right. Thank you for saying that. I'm glad that the clammy guys. Well, they're clammy with me too. Trust me. That's when I knew that I wasn't going to get anywhere. I knew pretty early on in an interview if it was going to go anywhere, usually within a minute or two, 3 to 5 minutes at the most. But but yeah, that was my goal. That was my goal. And I do think that a lot of it is universal. A lot of it is universal. And what I discovered is that men do respect women who stand up for themselves, just like they respect other men who stand up for themselves. That it surprises them, but it's a pleasant surprise. that they see things that are so incredibly detailed that we overlook and don't think that they notice, right? So I'll give you an example. I was talking to a man. He's actually like a firefighter chief in my area where I live. And he's been in love with his wife for, I think, I don't know, 15, 16 years now. They've got three kids. He adores her. They have a wonderful marriage. And he's telling me about when he first met her. They were dating. So after a couple weeks, maybe a month, they go back to his place and he rolls over at 4 a.m. He thought he just knocked her socks off, right? He rolls over at 4 a.m. and she's gone. And he reaches for her to cuddle and she's gone. And he's like, what? And he like realizes that she just left. So he runs out the door, drives in his car down the road, right? Sees her fast walking to, you know, briskly walking to the bus stop. And he's like, what are you doing? And she said, I have to get to work and I didn't want to wake you. And he's like, get in the car. I'll take you. You should have asked me. And she said, no, I take two buses to work every day. It's fine. I don't mind. I do it every day. And by the time she got in his car and secured her seatbelt, she had also secured his respect because the message was, I'm not going to stop living my life. My priorities aren't going to stop because wow. You thought that you knocked it out of the ballpark. And he was telling me this story, dumbfounded 15 years later. I mean, he still couldn't believe the look on his face when he was I could not believe it.
Wow.
I couldn't, right? As opposed to the woman who's like, oh, sweetie, I'll call in sick to work. Let me make you breakfast in bed. Yeah. Let me fetch your slippers.
Let me go let get here. And
roll over. And, you know, and hop on one leg and bark like a dog. No. You know? And so was she mean? Was she nasty? No, but she was just who she is. And she was, and the message is nonverbal. You know, it's not that men clam up. I want women to have the information verbally in my book. But when you really think about it, most relationships are nonverbal. You know, when someone's a good friend, you don't have to have a conversation. If someone's snubbing you, you don't have to have the conversation that you know that they're snubbing you. They just don't want you around. Like if I do business with someone and I don't feel like they're just holding up to their end of the deal, do I have a conversation about it or do I just stop doing business with them? You right. know, it's like you can't make somebody fit into a mold that you want them to fit into. You've got to watch and see who they are and not have rose-colored glasses on. And a lot of the conversations, a lot of the cues, if somebody's leaving you on red, right, your texts all the time, and he doesn't make time for you, or you only hear from him once every 2 weeks, do you have to have a conversation? You don't know that you're not one of his favorites? You're his
you actually
favorite
don't.
Girl?
You don't. His actions are communicating. They're talking.
His actions are communicating, and silence is the loudest cry of all, right? So when I'm telling women how to communicate with men, I'm not telling them to play a game. I'm telling them communicate nonverbally. This is how you show confidence. If you try to whine and complain and nag and talk him out of what you're seeing because you don't want to accept it because it's too hurtful for you, then it's just going to create a downward spiral as opposed to just backing off a little bit, showing a little bit of dignity. Okay. You didn't call me back? Fine. I'm not calling you anymore. Let's wait till you come to me. You know, it's like a negotiation in business or, you know, in a legal matter, right? It's a contract negotiation. If you, you know, there's a saying in Mexico, it's a really good one. It's he who shows hunger doesn't eat.
Well, I'm writing that down.
Right? And yeah. It's kind of that motif, right? So The question is just cool your jets. Like you were looking for someone when you found him. If you're too eager, if you're too desperate, if you show your care too much, a lot of people will take advantage of that. They just don't have the, you know, and it's not that you shouldn't be kind, but you right. should be kind to somebody who's kind to you. You make the people important that make you important, you know, in their life. You don't do one-sided relationships. And if you have pride and self-worth and dignity and you see that it's one-sided, give less. Give less and until it's somewhat reciprocal. Because if it's not reciprocal, it's not a relationship. It's just one person being used.
So Sherry, you're reminding me of this quote by Oprah, which I don't have verbatim, but it was something to the effect of people fall in love with other people, not because of like what they do for them or what they say to them, but for how they make you feel. And I think that goes along with the, you know, the actions speak louder than words. Like if you're giving to somebody and they're not reciprocating, right? And you had mentioned that before, you're going to feel like crap. And actually, they're going to feel like crap, too, because if you're taking from somebody and you're not reciprocating, then you don't care about that person anyway. So that's not a valuable relationship. So I think this the book goes along with that. And the principles in the book go along with that, because it's going to be you got to treat people the way you want to be treated. And you're going to respond positively, whether you're a man or a woman in a relationship, to how the other person makes you feel about you.
And if a woman is too available, too eager, too emotionally attached too soon, a guy doesn't feel like it's a compliment to him. He feels like she would be attached to anybody. But if he has to work a little bit to get her attention, then it feels like more of a compliment to him and that she likes him for who he is.
That's well said, Sherry.
That's what I got from men.
Wow. Yep.
And that's what I want your next book to be, Sherry. I want your next book to be this book, but opposite. I want you to talk to all us gals and have this be a book to help men learn what we want from them. That's what I think your next series is going
to be. Well, that could be just one word. Cash. I'm kidding.
I love, you really say it on the cover of your book, Men Love Bees, because the subtext is from doormat to dream girl, a woman's guide to holding her own in a relationship. And in order to hold your own, you got to be your own person. You have to be strong. You have to know what you want. And you can't compromise on the important thing. Like you might be able to compromise on, you know, like I said, buying beer that's not expired, but you can't compromise on who you are and what you value. And what's important to you. And I love this. Why men love bees, why men marry bees. And I think we're going to have to wrap up so we don't get cut off in our fabulous. We could talk to you forever, Sherry.
Yes, we're having you back.
Conversationalist, yes.
Where can people get your books, follow your wisdom, get in touch with you?
Or what country can't they get your book in?
Thank you for that. That's very sweet of you. Apple and Amazon, pretty much wherever books are sold in the English language here in the U.S.
We are wrapping up with author, a world-renowned, millions and millions of copies sold author, Sherry Argoff. She has written Why Men Love Bees and Why Men Marry Bees. Both books are available on Apple and Amazon. Christmas is coming up. We are going to have you back in the not too distant future, Sherry Argoff. It's really been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sherry.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for all your kind words. Very much appreciated and probably way overstated, but thank you. I appreciate you.
Well, thank you very much, Sherry. And we will be back with segment number 3 of Happy Hour here. Not quite done yet this morning. So for Jonas Bilbor and Carol Pesci, I'm Frankenberry. Stick around. We have a little bit more to come.
Live better and laugh harder. It's Sunday morning and happy hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
And welcome back one more time here this morning to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frankenberry.
It was very nice to talk to Sherry Argoff earlier.
She's awesome.
I love the concept of the books. They're timeless. I think they're so useful in this day and age. And I got to admit, I love the titles. Even though we couldn't really give the titles their due credit on the air, I just love the titles. So, pick up the book. I think we can sort of let our audience know that sometime before Christmas, I believe Sherry's going to come back on and she might have a gift for some of our listeners. So if you enjoyed this show, be sure to check back because I think we're going to have her back before the holidays.
All right. Very cool. That sounds good. So again, to Sherry Argoff, thank you so much for joining us this morning and for Carol Pesci and for Jonas Spilbore. I'm that dude named Frankenberry and we will be back again next week. Same time right here. And we'll talk to you then. Be good.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 929WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.